Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flint.
Well, Margaret, I was watching the proceedings of the final days of the Supreme Court session, and I know many people were buoyed by their same-sex rights decision, but I was struck also by the fact that it's been almost a year since the last landmark ruling upholding the Affordable Care Act.
That's right, Mark. And that decision a year ago sent shockwaves across the country, both in policy circles and certainly in the healthcare arena, and really impacts all Americans. The Supreme Court upheld the legality of the Affordable Care Act, leaving it largely intact. But still, you know, the drumbeat against the law continues to this day. Supporters of meaningful health reform in the country take nothing for granted as they go about their work.
We're 10 weeks out from the first day people can enroll in the plan, and there's much work to do on its implementation. But many of our guests have reminded us that we have to take the long view when looking at this legislation. It will impact future generations, and there will certainly be changes to the legislation.
Well, one thing that hasn't changed, of course, is that we believe that healthcare is a right and not a privilege. And indeed, the evidence is clear that access to care for all Americans is the first step in improving health outcomes. And on that note, many Americans, of course, are suffering the ill effects of obesity in this country. And at their recent annual meeting, the AMA took a bold step forward and designated obesity as a disease.
You know, one third of American adults are obese, and one fifth of American children are. And the attending health problems related to obesity are weighing heavily on the healthcare system as well.
Well, Mark, the designation by the AMA is a step in the right direction. Of course, it's only one step. We have to do much more than recognize it as a disease. We need policies and initiatives that target the obesity epidemic, target behavior change, if we're going to be able to have an impact on the problem. And really, we have no option. We have to make this one better.
And that's something our guest today is working to achieve. Dan Glickman is the former secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture under President Clinton. He's now with the Bipartisan Policy Center Nutrition and Physical Activity Initiative. His team is hoping to generate policies that will link the billions of dollars earmarked for the nation's farm bill and align it with policies aimed at reducing obesity.
And it's a very interesting idea, Mark. The bill that deals with both supporting agriculture in this country is the same bill that provides food assistance to those in need. And right now, they're not currently tied to nutrition directives, so should be a very interesting conversation.
We'll also hear from Laurie Robertson, managing editor of factcheck.org. She's been drilling into some of the details of the Affordable Care Act these past few weeks. She's helping to answer some of the unanswered questions about the healthcare law.
But no matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by Googling CHC Radio. And as always, if you have comments, please email us at chcradio.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter, because we love to hear from you.
We'll get to our interview with Secretary Dan Glickman in just a moment, but first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines. United Healthcare, the nation's largest insurer, is bowing out of the individual market in California. The healthcare company notified state regulators that it would withdraw itself from the individual market at the start of 2014, following Aetna's lead a week ago. Another signal that health insurance companies are altering strategies in advance of full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, which requires insurance companies to accept all customers, even those with pre-existing conditions that could prove costlier. Promotion and the healthcare law. It's creating some unique partnerships. The Obama administration is trying to generate interesting ways to get the message out about the Affordable Care Act, and they're banking on the idea that mama knows best when it comes to gaining affordable health coverage through the new exchanges. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says they are enlisting help from advocacy groups like Moms Rising all the way up to AARP to exert a little mom-generated guilt on the so-called young invincibles, those past the age of 26 who are uninsured, healthy, and would gain coverage on the exchanges. HHS is also using local community groups, local libraries, and other homegrown entities to get the message out about the Affordable Care Act. But don't expect an ACA booster message during halftime on the gridiron this coming football season. The National Football League has yielded to pressure from conservative lawmakers on Capitol Hill not to allow their franchises to be used to pitch the merits of the health care law. Brian McCarthy, vice president of communications at the NFL, said that the league has no plans to engage in this area and have no substantive contact with the administration about the Affordable Care Act. The Obama administration has also reached out to the NBA, NASCAR, and the American and National Baseball Leagues. The Red Sox were very influential in getting the message out about the Massachusetts health care law back in 2006 under then-Governor Mitt Romney. Ah, the lazy days of summertime when children put away pencils, pads, and uniforms and pack on the pounds at an accelerated rate. A recent study showed a rapid acceleration of weight gain among kids during summer break. Seems the worst habits of being sedentary and increased junk food consumptions increase in summer. A report by the Journal of School Health suggests fitness and nutrition programs being extended throughout the year. I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines.
We're speaking today with Secretary Dan Glickman, former Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Senior Fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center, where he co-chairs the Commission on Political Reform, the Nutrition and Physical Activity Initiative, as well as the Task Force on Defense. Secretary Glickman spent 18 years representing Kansas in the U.S. House of Representatives. Mr. Glickman is also Executive Director of the Aspen Institute Congressional Program, a nonpartisan educational program for members of the U.S. Congress. Secretary Glickman, welcome to Conversations on Health.
Thank you. Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Your team at the Bipartisan Policy Center just held a news conference and issued a report on the need to promote more targeted food and farm policy that will impact the obesity epidemic in this country, a problem so vast in scope that your organization and many others have warned its threat to our national security due to obesity's direct impact on healthcare costs. What's the real impact on obesity epidemic on the nation's healthcare system?
Well, about 80% of the cost of health care is for chronic disease, and most of that occurs for people over the age of 50 years old who have diseases like diabetes, heart disease, certain cancers, and just back problems, orthopedic issues, and much of that is caused by bad diet. And so if you look at the national budget of the United States, most of the growth in the budget over the next few years is going to occur in Medicare and Medicaid, which is health care costs caused by chronic disease, caused in large part by bad nutrition and poor physical activity. And so what we eat has a lot to do with this nation's fiscal health as well. And for folks who want to try to get the deficit reduced, there is no better alternative than trying to deal with healthcare costs. And to do that, you got to deal with the prevention side.
So, Secretary, a year ago, your team at the Bipartisan Policy Center issued a report, Lots to Lose, How America's Health and Obesity Crisis Threatens Our Economic Future. And so we're so appreciative of your making the link between policy and this huge health problem. But your report made 26 specific recommendations aimed at tackling the obesity epidemic. Why are the Farm Bill and the government's other food and farm policies such vital and yet not well-known tools in stemming obesity in this country?
We tend to support five crops: wheat, corn, cotton, rice, and soybeans. And then if you look at the dietary guidelines put out by the government, both by the Department of Agriculture and Department of Health and Human Services, it really advises people to eat other things like fresh fruits and vegetables. So on the one hand, we're providing money for farmers basically to produce certain items, but then we're telling people to deal with their health to eat other items. So there's a disconnect there, and that's something that we pointed out in our report. The biggest part of the Farm Bill is food stamps, or the SNAP program. And SNAP was established as a way to help people who were hurting and hungry to eat adequate amounts of food, but nutrition was supposed to be a big part of it. And now, for the most part, we don't devote as much attention to nutrition in the SNAP program as we should. So there are two public policy issues I just mentioned that impact people's health and disease because of the issue of what folks eat.
You know, I'm going to pull the thread on that a little, Secretary, because you know very well that the Farm Bill is really sort of designed in silos, and you're really trying to educate those who are working on this, but the American public, that this is all of these are interconnected, and the healthcare costs in this country are really skyrocketing. So talk to us a little bit about how this Farm Bill gets managed and incorporated, in your mind, into the health policies and reforms that need to take place, and how do you get that next larger context understood?
Well, in the first place, the current Farm Bill was voted down in the House of Representatives. So we right now we're kind of in limbo in terms of federal farm policy. And one of the reasons it was voted down is because the cuts to the food stamp program were sufficiently large that great amounts of Democrats determined not to vote for it. See, the Farm Bill is both the nutrition title and the farm title. So they are supposed to be linked in some way. But, in recent years, it's been a real struggle because of budgetary issues. As we deal with agriculture policy and food policy, we can no longer avoid thinking about nutrition as a key part of the billions and billions and billions of dollars that taxpayers pay out every year for these particular policies. And so we have an obligation to look at what people eat and giving them better information, encouraging them to take care of themselves better, because the Farm Bill probably has as much to do with the health of individuals as any other piece of legislation.
Well, Secretary, you know, it's only at the recent gathering of the American Medical Association that the organization passed a resolution defining obesity as a disease, not just a primary disease, but also the root cause of so many other secondary diseases, as you mentioned earlier. And we see the effect of obesity across the spectrum of age and all aspects of healthcare. So what kind of impact do you think that the designation of obesity as a disease is now going to have on how both the medical establishment and also policymakers address the obesity epidemic? What would you like to see people doing, and what more will be required?
I doubt the American Medical Association has ever even thought about how the Farm Bill impacts health policy. And I doubt that a lot of the farm groups have really thought about health and nutrition as part of farm policy. So the fact that they've designated obesity as a disease, I think, will impact the health insurance industry and the medical community, doctors and others, to really focus a lot more on what it is that people eat. And that will then have an impact on farm policy, because ultimately farmers will grow what people want to eat. And so that link is strengthened by the designation of obesity as a disease.
We're speaking today with Secretary Dan Glickman, former Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Senior Fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center, where he co-chairs the Commission on Political Reform and the Nutrition and Physical Activity Initiative. Secretary Glickman is an 18-year veteran of the U.S. House of Representatives. You know, I want to get back to the political landscape for a moment. You served in Congress, and you were entrenched at a time when there was a distinctly far less partisanship. I know you're really concerned about the intransigence that's happening in Congress. What do you think some of the solutions are, not just on the food and farm policy, but the larger conversation that needs to happen in Washington, where people need to speak to each other versus at each other?
It's a very good question, and if I had the actual answer to it, I'd write a book and make a lot of money and could open my own radio station and operate a talk show. So, but I would say, you know, there are many causes of what's happened. You know, the money in politics, the fixation on raising money, I think takes a lot of time out of the system for members of Congress that used to spend time focusing on the issues. The 24-hour media cycle, the growth of these outside groups, super PACs and others. We have a kind of a tribal atmosphere in Congress. Both sides of the aisle participate in it. It's much more difficult to be a leader in Congress, or in the executive branch for that matter, than it used to be. But notwithstanding all these things, our political system is still resilient, and ultimately the public has to speak up. They have to demand that their political leaders solve problems and not just engage in bitter fighting. You know, we don't need a civil war between our political system. Folks want these problems dealt with. But ultimately, in our system, it's the public that has to push their members to do this.
Well, Secretary, as you say that, I have two images in my mind. And one image is the Friday morning farmers market near my office, where people bring their SNAP vouchers and exchange them for fresh vegetables and fruits and other kinds of produce, where moms and kids have their WIC vouchers. So on that very granular local neighborhood level, we can see the impact of a lot of both local advocacy and also state and federal advocacy that allows for things like the redemption of the vouchers. My question to you would be, as you go up to the 50,000-foot level and you're looking at things which I can barely comprehend, like the corn subsidies and how all that works, do we have evidence to suggest that making a shift in policy at that level will have kind of a direct line benefit down to the ground level? What are we operating on here in terms of evidence-based policy?
You know, most of the acreage in this country is grown on these five crops I just mentioned, and many of those crops are used to feed animals, and animal agriculture is about half of the gross national product, so to speak, of agriculture in this country. And, you know, the government is not going to tell people what to eat, and we're not going to have, you know, kind of a police state in this regard. But what our farm policy needs to do is to encourage the production of healthier foods, And that means a good balanced diet, which includes large quantities of fruits and vegetables and legumes. And then we need better education of consumers by everybody in our system, including doctors and the medical community. You know, they've kind of been the missing link in all this stuff, because and what we have found in our Bipartisan Policy Center review is very few doctors and very few medical schools teach nutrition. Mm-hmm. Doctors are very good once you're sick, not very good on how to prevent illness. So there are large institutions in our society that need to get engaged in this debate beyond the government. Another is corporate America, which employs about 75 million people. You know, more and more they're finding the lost productivity due to illness caused by bad diet or poor physical activity mm-hmm. is a huge problem for them. So we need to encourage the production of more fruits and vegetables, which are like the programs that you talked about. But there is no one silver bullet. I call it there is a silver buckshot. Mm-hmm. There's a myriad of ways to deal with these issues. And it reminds me of that old quote, for every complicated problem, there is a simple and a wrong solution. There are no simple solutions to this problem.
Well, one of the pellets in that buckshot has to be health technology and data sharing. And I know a little off-field farm and food policy, but with the sort of ubiquitous nature of social media, cell phones and the like, the ability to share information. So how do you think technology is going to play a role on trying to help influence people's decision-making?
Well, certainly in modern information flow will get people information faster and, as you say, in a more ubiquitous way, and everybody will be able to have it on their handheld devices or whatever technology is coming down the pike. More and more people will be sharing best practices. That's something that, you know, there's a lot of great things happening in this country in terms of nutrition and physical activity in the private sector, in the schools, and corporate America, but that information has to be shared so others can look at it. And so clearly new technology gives us a great opportunity. And then, of course, science. And we need to adequately fund research into issues of nutrition. So, you know, people are often very confused about, you know, what they eat. I mean, our diet is complex, and we need better information from the science and health community and the kind of information that's understandable by the American public. They get bombarded by lots of different images, including advertising of not such good foods on television. And so they need to be able to make better judgments for themselves.
Secretary, maybe as one final question, just so we leave our listeners no doubt in their mind about the importance of this topic. When we talk about threat to the national security that the obesity epidemic represents, it's a threat to certainly the health and productivity of the American public, but also it's a sheer economic burden. Maybe just a final wrap-up on the dimensions of the economic burden of obesity.
Well, first of all, when you consider 70 to 80% of health care costs, private insurance carriers, Medicare, Medicaid, is due to chronic disease caused by bad nutrition and physical activity practices. That's a huge problem for our federal government that has a massive deficit. And the biggest part of the biggest growing part of our deficit is health care costs. So, but not only does it affect the cost to the federal budget or your own personal costs, but even the military will tell you that they're seeing large numbers of enlistees not qualified for a military enlistment because of either overweight, bad teeth, other kinds of health conditions caused by bad diet or poor physical activity. So this is a real problem, and it's a worse problem in America than it's in other parts of the world where, you know, we've lived in great affluence for a long period of time, and issues of nutrition haven't really been at the top of the game for many, many Americans. And now we're finding that the chickens have come home to roost and that health care costs are a big, big factor in our national debate on fiscal security and national security.
We've been speaking today with Secretary Dan Glickman, former Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Senior Fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center, where he co-chairs the Commission on Political Reform and the Nutrition and Physical Activity Initiative. You can find out more about the work they do by going to bipartisan-policy.org. Secretary Glickman, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations on Healthcare.
I'm very glad to be with you.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, President Obama was pushing the new insurance exchanges recently and encouraging those who need to buy insurance on their own to sign up through state-based exchanges beginning October 1st. This enrollment period will last through the end of March. The exchanges are a major part of the Affordable Care Act. Currently, 15.4 million Americans buy their own insurance on what's called the individual market, but that number is expected to increase to 24 million by 2023 through the exchanges, where millions of uninsured Americans will gain coverage. The Obama administration wants about 7 million people to join the exchanges in the open enrollment period that will begin in October, and it wants about 2.6 million of those to be young and healthy folks. There's a big push to get the young to join the exchanges so that the risk pools are not overwhelmingly made up of older and less healthy individuals, which would bring premium costs up. As for whether premiums will cost more or less than people would pay without the law, that depends a lot on individuals and their circumstances. Were they buying a cheap bare-bones plan before? Do they have pre-existing conditions that price them out of the individual market? What kind of insurance protections existed in their home states before the federal law? Will they qualify for premium subsidies, which will go to those earning up to 400% of the federal poverty level? For now, we recommend that those who will buy their own coverage visit the Kaiser Family Foundation's online subsidy calculator. It's merely an estimate, but you can get an idea of what premiums might cost and what kind of subsidy you could receive to offset the price. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Asthma is one of the leading causes of trips to the emergency room for children, and there are often a correlation between high-density, low-income neighborhoods and more trips to the hospital for treatment and intervention. When officials at Boston Children's Hospital noticed a spike in asthma outbreaks in certain neighborhood clusters, they decided to do something about it. They launched the Community Asthma Initiative. Triggers for asthma are well known. Dust, mold, pests, mice, and even overuse of certain cleaning products can cause trouble. They realized that if you could treat the environments in the patient's home, that might reduce the need to treat the patient in the emergency room.
The home visiting efforts work with children and families that have been identified through their hospitalizations and emergency room visits as an identification of having poorly controlled asthma, and also it's a teachable moment when families are open to making changes in terms of care and environment within the home.
Dr. Elizabeth Wood heads the program and says the first step is to identify the frequent flyers, those kids who make repeated trips to the emergency room. Then they match with the community health worker who visits their home several times and assesses the home for asthma triggers.
And they work on three areas: understanding asthma itself, understanding the medications and the need for control medications, and then working on the environmental issues within the home.
Families are given everything from HEPA filter vacuum cleaners to air purifiers. They are told not to clean with certain toxic products, and the homes are monitored for the presence of pests or rodents. The result, says Dr. Wood, has been pretty dramatic.
What's remarkable is that there was a 56% reduction in patients with any emergency department visits and 80% reduction in patients with any hospitalizations.
And while this program is expensive, about $2,400 per family, there is a return on investment in reduced hospital cost and healthier children. The program has been so successful, it's being deployed in other hospital communities around the country. The Community Asthma Initiative, a simple reshifting of resources aimed at removing the cause of disease outbreaks in the community, leading to healthier patient populations, thus significantly reducing the need for hospital care. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at wesufm.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.